Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Tonight I'd like to talk about meditation and particularly to talk about making peace with conditions in our meditation. I gave a weekend retreat recently and this was the theme of the weekend retreat, making peace with conditions. And if we understand that what we do in meditation and what we learn in meditation is something that we can take with us into our daily life, we'll understand how part of the meditation is about making the mind focused on the meditation object. But another aspect of the meditation is learning what's going on when the mind isn't able to stay focused on the meditation object. Because what goes on in our meditation is an example of what goes on in our mind in our daily life. And so the practice that we do in the meditation is a practice for life. And the more we learn the meditation, the lessons in the meditation and take them out into our normal everyday experience, the more that supports us being able to apply those same lessons in our meditation practice. So making peace with the conditions that we're dealing with. The conditions that we're dealing with in the meditation are the state of our own mind when we come to meditation. I was encouraging you to take a moment just to notice whether the mind tonight at this moment is dull or busy. It might have been agitated, might have been irritated, might have been excited. Anything is possible. That's one of the conditions, one of the aspects, our own state of mind. And then there are many other conditions that are operating to produce our experience of the moment. So the temperature, tonight it's hot. The number of people in the room, tonight it's crowded. The sounds around us. Someone's coughing, someone's shifting position. These are all conditions that are arising in the present moment around us. And there might be conditions that aren't even to do with what's happening here right now, what kind of day we've had, what's happening in our family life, what's coming up over the weekend. These are things which don't actually exist in the present moment except in our mind as memories, as hopes, as plans, as ideas. And yet they affect our experience of the present moment. Whether we feel happy or agitated, whether we feel peaceful or angry, will be the produced result of all of those factors playing, interplaying, interacting, and producing our experience in the present moment. In the meditation, when we work to take up one object for the focus of our attention, like the breath, we have to understand that the movement of the mind towards that object is also going to be affected by the causes and conditions that are operating in our life at this moment. Taking up an object for our attention is an act of will, a choice. But what kind of strength of will we bring to that? What kind of clarity of mind that we bring to that? Whether we like what we're doing or not, all of those contributing factors will be affected by various causes and conditions. And you will have all experienced that simply wanting to take up the breath, applying the mind to the breath as an act of will, doesn't produce the result of being able to keep the attention on the breath continuously. We start to become aware of some of the other factors, some of the other conditions that are operating in the moment as we try to take up the meditation object and we find that the mind keeps moving away. Not only does the mind move away, but we react to the fact that the mind is moving away. So if the mind moves off into a pleasant fantasy, we might think, oh, that's nice. That's better than the breath. But if we're determined that we want to stay on the breath and yet some sound in the environment keeps annoying us, disturbing us, our idea of this sound as a disturbance, then we find that annoyance, irritation arises, and we start to listen to the sound and also bring the mind back to the breath with that same quality of irritation. So the external conditions start to produce internal conditions, our reactions, and those reactions in turn affect how we deal with what's going on around us, what's coming in through the sense doors, what we're hearing, how the body feels, whether the temperature is just right or it's too hot, is all our interpretation of what's going on in the present moment. Now, when we are trying to take up the breath or any other object and we're not able to succeed, then we can very easily make all of those conditions, whether they're the state of my own mind, I'm too tired, or the sound of someone sitting next to us who's coughing, we can make those things problems. We can get into a battle with those conditions because we perceive them as stopping us from doing what we want to do, achieving the result we want to achieve, and that is to pay attention to the breath until a peaceful feeling arises. And so we find that we are battling, sitting through our meditation with a feeling of anger, a feeling of resentment sometimes, because we're being prevented from achieving our goal, and we start to make war with the conditions in our own mind and the conditions in the world around us. And when we have that kind of attitude, then we also make war with the breath or whatever meditation object we're watching. That underlying current of feeling we put onto the meditation object. And so watching the meditation object becomes less and less attractive. The object itself becomes more and more negative. And so we often find ourselves with no place to rest. And this is the kind of battle that many of us experience as we sit through the meditation and find that there's one unpleasant thing after the other, arising either in the body or in the mind, triggered by what's going on internally or what's going on around us. It doesn't really take us to the state of peace that we are aiming for. And so what I would like to encourage is to take a different approach to the conditions that we're experiencing as we try to take up the meditation object. Rather than seeing those conditions as hostile forces, and rather than getting into a battle with those conditions, that we open up to the conditions, accepting the conditions, relaxing around the conditions, so that we don't develop this undercurrent of aversion, either to the conditions or to the meditation object. How do we do that? First of all, we have to understand that the mind in meditation, just like the mind in everyday life, is the result of those conditions. It is produced by the conditions of our life. It arises dependent on conditions. And so if we are understanding the mind, we understand that the mind is by its nature used to taking up one object after the other, moment after moment after moment, millisecond after millisecond after millisecond, taking up a sight, taking up a sound, taking up a thought, moment by moment by moment by moment. The mind is, by its nature, very active, working all the time. That's all minds are like that. And if we are using our mind in a way that keeps it very busy, keeps it very stimulated, keeps it constantly on the move, then we can't expect to sit down on the meditation cushion and stop the mind from moving. Now, it's a very important understanding to appreciate that the mind is going to continue to move even once we sit down in meditation. If we know that and we understand that, then we don't battle to strangle the mind, to stop it from moving, to hold it into one in one place in a very violent kind of way, which is what we do when we tense up around the movements of the mind. Not only does the mind move by its nature from one thing to the other, but the mind has to have an object to pay attention to. It doesn't operate in a vacuum. So understanding that, we understand that what we're doing in the meditation practice is giving the mind an object which we select. And then we are encouraging the mind to take up that object, moment after moment after moment, as a replacement for all of the other objects that it usually runs after. Usually it runs after changing objects, one thing after the other, moment after moment after moment. Either sense contacts, hearing or tasting, for example, and then processing those contacts, making sense of them, identifying that was a car, that was a bitter taste, I like that. That's the processing that goes on after every sense contact. So instead of trying to shut the mind down forcefully, what we're trying to do is to give the mind a replacement object. An object that is soothing, an object which is wholesome, and an object that the mind can settle on and which will take the mind to calm. When we understand that this is what we're doing, then every time the mind wanders away from the meditation object, even if it wanders to a thought about just how tired we are, we have a better chance of understanding that tiredness is just one of the conditions of the mind produced by various causes and conditions. Why is the mind tired? Because it's been working hard, because it's been moving lots, because it's been busy, because it hasn't had enough rest, because too much has been happening for it to process and come back to a state of peace. So tiredness isn't the enemy. Tiredness isn't something that we have to kill off. It's something we just have to acknowledge and recognize as one of the conditions in the mind at the moment. Now that doesn't mean that we become complacent and just say, oh well, I'm tired, I can't practice. We now open up to work with the tired mind. And here we come to the other aspect of what we're trying to do. In taking up the meditation object, we all know that if there's something interesting, something that delights the mind, even if we're tired, we can always find that extra bit of energy that's required to stay up and watch the movie we want to see, or go out and visit the friends that we'd like to see. We can always generate energy when we are interested in what it is that we are going to do. So the other side of taking up the meditation object, replacing all of those other contacts or objects or conditions with the meditation object, is that we have to generate interest and enthusiasm for the meditation object. We have to like it. We have to find it interesting in order for the mind to be willing to stick with it. So when we take up the breath, particularly in the early stages before we've tasted the peace that comes through being able to stay continuously focused on the breath, we have to make the breath the kind of object that we'd like to spend time with. How do we make the breath interesting? How do we give the mind something to take delight in? Well, the reflection that the breath is a connection with life. It seems very mundane, routine, dull, but it's a fact that if we don't breathe in again, we're dead. this is very precious, this breath that's coming in right now. This breath is supporting life, my life. Where does this breath come from? How much did I have to pay to get it? Well, it comes freely. Where do I have to go? What qualifications do I have before I can get my next breath? Well, I don't have to have any qualifications. The breath just comes. Yeah, but when did it start coming? How long did I have to wait before the breath started to come? Well, right from the time I was born. The first breath came and that was it. It's been coming ever since. So, how wonderful, this friend, this breath, this great companion on my journey in life. This is the way that we brighten up a dull mind. This is the way we generate an interest and enthusiasm for the breath that we're paying attention to. When we find it hard to pick up the breath because the mind is dull or because the mind is moving away to other more interesting objects, we can try holding our breath and see for how long we can actually survive without the next breath coming in. When we hold our breath moment after moment after moment, we will notice the tension that builds up because the body hasn't had its next breath in. Very natural, this tension around not getting the next breath. And then taking that next breath, we surely know that we're breathing in. And we surely know that we're breathing out. This is the way we work with the meditation object. We work with the mind to bring the mind to the point where it wants to watch the breath. Whether the mind is dull or whether the mind is agitated. We make the breath so interesting, so pleasant, so much our friend that we want to spend time with it. If we battle with the conditions, if we make enemies of whatever it is that's happening around us or arising within us, then the background quality of the mind that we bring to the breath is aversion. We stir up the mind rather than moving towards the peace that we're seeking. So we're actually going in the opposite direction that we want to go in. And not only that, once we have this background feeling of aversion, we can't see the meditation object clearly. And we can't even see those other conditions that are contributing to the present moment clearly, because the mind is already disturbed, and that disturbed mind is unable to see beyond the superficial appearance of things, is unable to see things other than how we ordinarily, habitually relate to things. It becomes just a habit. That disturbed mind doesn't lead us to clarity, doesn't lead us to insight. So part of what we're trying to do is not only to bring the mind to a state of peace by watching the breath continuously, because that state of peace itself is pleasant and leads to clarity of mind, as well as tranquility of mind, but we're also trying to understand the nature of the mind and its relationship to the conditions in our life. How the conditions in our life affect the mind, not only in the meditation, but in the way we go about our everyday business. Unless we have a clear mind, we don't see our own patterns, our own ways of dealing with things, our own patterns of thinking, and how this affects the kind of quality of life that we have. So let me give you an example from the meditation retreat. I was encouraging people to relax around the aches in their body, the tiredness in their mind, the heat, the sounds, whatever was happening, to know that those things were there, to acknowledge them, but to not be disturbed by them, just to allow them to be present and to keep on putting down attention on those objects and going back again and again to the breath. We were also doing loving kindness practice, actively trying to send loving feelings to ourselves, send loving feelings to different people that we were involved with, and trying to use those feelings of loving kindness to help us to relax in the meditation itself. Now, someone came to speak to me after we'd been practicing through Saturday, and it's interesting when we first go on a meditation retreat and we've got a whole weekend to spend on our own mind. We don't have other things to worry about. Someone's providing the food, someone's taking care of what's going to happen later. We don't have to think about those things. We have this great sense of relief of finally making it to the meditation retreat, particularly if we're living busy lives. And through Friday night and Saturday morning, it's such a pleasant experience to be in the meditation retreat. But by Saturday afternoon, very often that pleasant feeling of being there is replaced by boredom, disappointment, irritation, because the meditation isn't going the way that we expected it to, the way that we hoped it would. And these expectations and these hopes are conditions. These are conditions which affect the mind. We're not even aware most of the time that we've got these conditions playing themselves out. Why is this particular meditation not so enjoyable? Because I wanted it to be other than this. I wanted it to be better than this. I wanted it to be more concentrated than this. It's not what I was expecting, and so therefore it becomes wrong. That subtle negativity is in the mind before we've even noticed it. So someone came up and said to me, "Oh, I'm so bored. The breath is so boring. Can't we look at something? Can't we have another meditation object, something that's even more, that's interesting, something that's stimulating? This is just so boring. I can't be bothered watching the breath." And this is very typical. People say, "Oh, yeah, that's true." And after we talked about it, a number of people said, "Oh, yes, the breath is so boring." So to take up a reflection on what we mean by "the breath is so boring." When we make the breath an enemy, or when we make the fact that boredom is present into something that's wrong, then we automatically disturb the mind. We automatically go into habitual patterns of, "This is boring, I don't like it. There's something wrong with it, or there's something wrong with me. I should change the breath, or change the object, or change the situation." We just follow our usual ways of dealing with things that we don't like, instead of stopping and taking a look at the whole situation. And so I explored with this person what was really wrong with the breath. I mean, this breath is your connection with life. What's wrong with it? And so as we reflected, the person said, well, actually, when I want to relax, I usually do something interesting. I do something active in order to let go of tension and in order to relax. I take up some kind of activity. That's how I normally relax. That's how I think about what you have to do in order to relax. I do something interesting. Now, just sitting here and watching the breath is not doing anything interesting. So one's normal way of relaxing and thinking of this is the way that I relax, this is the right way to relax, this is the way we should do to relax, when we don't reflect on that, when we don't examine it, automatically makes sitting still, watching the breath, wrong. It's boring. Now, not only doing something interesting is the way I relax, because I do interesting things, it makes me an interesting person. I do all these interesting things, and that's how I spend my time. Now, here I am sitting watching the breath over and over and over again, and it's boring, and I'm boring because I'm not doing anything interesting. Now, this is actually what came out of this person's reflection about why the breath wasn't meeting her expectations of what the meditation should be like, what the meditation object should do for the mind. When we reflected like this and the person realized that they'd already signed off on the breath because it wasn't what they were used to, wasn't what they were expecting. They hadn't actually taken a close look at the breath to know whether or not the breath is really that boring. But just going along with their usual patterns hadn't allowed them to see that not only were they doing this in the meditation, but this is one of their approaches to life. I've got to be doing something interesting in order for life to be fulfilling, in order for me to be an interesting person. No wonder I'm exhausted, because I have to keep on going and going and going and going and never questioning whether that was actually leading to a place, to a state of peace, of ease. This is why it's important that we don't just automatically make the conditions in our mind, the conditions around us, our reactions to the meditation, automatically wrong. Why we build up the ability to start acknowledging those things, noticing them, and reflecting on them. And this is one of the ways that we can work with the mind when it is dull, is to, instead of just trying to hang on to the breath very grimly, to reflect on what it is that's taking us away from the breath. If we're very tired and we understand that the mind is produced by conditions, what conditions produce the mind at the moment? What conditions have contributed to the state of tiredness? And we might see that we've been very busy. We haven't had enough rest. Whatever's been going on, we start to recognise those things as factors that are affecting our state of being, rather than just feeling like we're the hapless victims or that this is my mind and there's nothing I can do about it. Once we start to identify the conditions that are affecting us, we might see whether we want to do something about those conditions, whether some of those conditions are things that we can change. Some of those conditions might be things that we want to increase because we see that this thing is actually very helpful. This brings happiness and peace into the mind, while this thing disturbs the mind, takes away the clarity of the mind. Once we start to be able to identify the conditions in our life and the effect that they have on us, it gives us much more personal power over the state of our mind. And as we affect the state of our mind, we affect the state of our interaction with the world. We affect the quality of our relationships. We affect the quality of the world around us. This all comes about by being able to observe the mind with more acceptance, more peacefulness, leading to more clarity. That clarity is always disturbed once we go into battle with the conditions as they're operating. Once we understand the nature of the mind and we understand conditions, then we can work on the external and the internal conditions and also understand that when we're taking up the meditation object, that is our anchor point. That's what allows us to find a place of rest in the turbulence of the changing conditions. It's very hard to see, even when we hear these kinds of instructions over and over and over again. And I'll give you another example from the meditation retreat. Someone was telling me that they had a terrible retreat because the whole of the retreat they were trying to suppress a cough. They had a tickle in their throat and they didn't want to cough because they didn't want to disturb other people. Now, on the weekend retreat, there were lots of people with coughs, and some people had the best coughs you've ever heard. They really, really were good ones. And yet, here was someone who had a cough, and even though the theme of the retreat was making peace with conditions and having a tickle in your throat and wanting to cough is one of the conditions that one is with at the moment, instead of making peace with the tickle and coughing when necessary, they spent the whole weekend struggling not to cough. So I said to them, what was going on? And they said, well, I didn't want to disturb other people. And as they looked, they saw that there was a fear about the reactions of people, that they might be irritated with them because they were making a noise. And I said, well, look, here's a meditation retreat where people have taken the 8 precepts, and the first one is not to harm deliberately. And so even if you cough, people aren't going to hit you on the head or do anything. This is a perfect opportunity to experience what it's like to do what you're afraid to do, and that is to cough and disturb other people. So this is a way of making peace with the condition of the tickle in the throat, making peace with the fear that someone might not like you or might get angry with you because you've disturbed them with a cough. A meditation retreat is the place where we're able to look at those things which are too frightening to look at other times, or too hidden to look at other times. And so here was something, the fear of being a disturbance. So that was an opportunity that didn't happen. So the next thing that I said to this person was, okay, you didn't cough. How did you deal with the tickle in your throat? And they said, oh, I had to hang on tight the whole weekend. I really had to work hard to struggle to stop the cough from coming up. And I said, we were talking about making peace with the condition. So you've made the tickle the enemy. And in struggling to suppress the cough, we automatically tighten around those things which we don't like. So trying to tighten around that sore throat to stop the cough from coming out means that not only you're tightening around the throat, you're tightening around usually the jaw, tightening around the shoulders, maybe even tightening around the rest of the face. So building up tension in the body. And when you build up tension in the body, automatically you build up tension in the mind. Tension in the mind leads to more tension in the body. So what a battle was going on, and here we are making peace with conditions. How hard it is to hear the instructions when it's going against what we usually do. We've made the cough the enemy and we've got to suppress it. And I said, what about the loving kindness practice we were doing? So many times during the weekend we were sending loving kindness to ourselves and to other people. Where was the loving kindness for the throat? Where was the loving kindness for the cough? Now, this is a very important lesson. This is what we have to understand. All of these tools are tools which we have to take and apply to our particular situation. So it's no good giving loving kindness to all the beings in the universe if we're at war with the tickle in our throat. The place that we need to focus in on is on the throat. And it's not enough just to say, oh, may my throat be well, may my throat be happy. This is how we have to use the mind deliberately. We have to direct the thinking process to support the meditation. So we look at the throat, we put our full attention on the throat, and we reflect on the throat. Now, how can we make the throat not our enemy, but our friend? How can we appreciate the throat? How can we give it loving kindness? Well, we reflect this throat. Every bit of food that goes into this body to sustain this body, to keep us alive, to keep us healthy, every bit goes down the throat. The hard bits, the soft bits, the hot bits, the cold bits, the tasty bits, the yucky bits, all have to go down the throat. How could we get by without this throat? Not only all the food, all the liquids, the hot ones, the cold ones, the ones we like, the ones we don't like, all have to go down the throat. Isn't it great? Not only the food, not only the liquids, all the air that goes into the lungs. Now, we can do without the food for a few days, but how can we do without the breath? We need this throat to be open. We need this throat to be working so we can breathe in and breathe out. Oh. And not only that, when all of that air comes in, it brings in germs, pollutants. Some of it gets filtered out in the nose, but a lot of it has to go down the throat. Some of it's going to stick. It's no wonder sometimes the throat gets sore. No wonder sometimes the throat itches. My, what a wonderful friend this throat is. My, how can I look after this throat? How can I support this throat? How can I relax around this throat to help it to cope with the tickle that's there? This is how we use the mind skillfully, generate loving kindness for that part of the body, that part of the mind, that part of our experience that we're making into an enemy. And as we do that, the mind relaxes, the body relaxes, and very often in that state, we can look even at a tickle in the throat, and rather than seeing it as a problem, we can start to observe it simply as physical sensations, scratchy sensations, prickly sensations, hot sensations, itchy sensations, coming and going. Nothing special, just the sort of feelings that come and go in this body again and again and again. And in the throat, that's what it's like right now. And very often when we can relax and observe in that way, the urge to cough is no longer there. We're no longer trying to get rid of those sensations. We're just allowing them to come and go according to their nature. Then we can start to see things, not just superficially, not just in our old way of liking and disliking, but seeing things as they really are. The throat is like this at the moment because of causes and conditions, changing moment by moment by moment. When the mind is disturbed, it can't see anything. When the mind is able to go to a state of peace, ease, even if it's not focusing on the breath, it's still able to focus on the object, the throat, and see things as they are. Seeing things as they are, relaxing around them, brings the mind to a state of peace, clarity, and insight. We start to recognize in that particular instance how the attitude to the throat is making the feelings in the throat even worse. As we tighten around the throat, how that's affecting the state of the mind. So we can't even watch the breath because we're so negative about the whole experience of the moment. None of that can be seen if we get into battle with the conditions that are happening. And so that's why it's very important that we continually work to make peace with the conditions in our mind. In the meditation, this is practice for being able to make peace with the conditions in our life. Very often, things don't go the way that we expected them to. They go the way we don't want them to go. They don't happen in the way that we'd like them to. And we can get into battle with those conditions, with other people, because it's not the way we want it to be. We make, very often, the situation worse because of our resistance to the way things are. And because we very often can't see what conditions are contributing to our reaction to the experience of the moment. And because we can't see that, we leave ourselves with no way out except to follow our old habit patterns. We're acting on automatic pilot again and again and again, almost like flying blind. We're flying in terms of what we've always done instead of what's appropriate for this situation right now. Learning to come to peace with conditions doesn't mean that it's always going to work out the way we want it to. And part of coming to peace is learning to accept that. So recently I went to a conference in Melbourne where I had to give a paper. And in this conference we were asked to prepare our papers in advance. 5,000 words in writing presented to the organisers a few days before the conference. And in my scheduling, I'd given a couple of afternoons to getting the paper organised, writing it out, getting it typed, and then being able to review it so I'd be well prepared for the conference before I got there. And this was an Australia-wide conference, and here I was going to represent the Buddhist Society of Western Australia and the Nuns Monastery, and all of the thoughts that I had around what I was going to do and why it was so important that this paper was prepared well, and I was really on top of the situation. Now, of course, what happened was that those two afternoons when I'd allocated time to do the paper got gobbled up by things which the week before I hadn't even expected would land in my basket. Things which not only gobbled up the afternoon but gobbled up the whole night for 2 days in a row. And then it was time to too late to send off the paper because it wasn't even written for the time that I was due to go. And so I took off to the conference without the paper written and basically without any clear idea of what I was going to present because I was preoccupied with all the other things that had gobbled up the time to prepare the paper. And so I went to the conference without being prepared, without having a clear idea of what I was going to say. And being aware of trying to make peace with conditions, I had to work with all my unfulfilled expectations, all my projections about what I was doing, carrying the torch all the way to Melbourne and going to represent the Buddhist Society and going to speak on behalf of the Nuns Monastery and all of those things which I'd built up in my mind. And I had to see these were all projections of my own mind. When I got to Melbourne, it was amazing to see that very few people had heard about the Nuns Monastery. Very few people knew what was going on in Perth. Very few people even knew who I was. People would say, "Oh, what are you doing here at the conference?" It was just really interesting to just see how all the fabrications of what I was expecting to be doing were that just that, fabrications. And projections which added to the burden, added to the intensity of having to give this paper. And they became the conditions that I had to deal with as I prepared for giving the talk. So there was not only what I wanted to say in the talk, there was all my expectations, unfulfilled as well as fulfilled. And because I was able to recognise what was going on, I was able to find peace with the conditions and to accept that I wasn't going to be as prepared as I would have liked to have been. I wasn't speaking to an audience who were eagerly anticipating, hearing what was happening in the Nuns Monastery in Perth. And so I ended up having to give quite a different talk to the one that I had initially imagined I was going to give, simply because I had to fill in a lot of blank spaces for the people who were listening to what I was going to say. Now, if I had been inflexible, if I had been overwhelmed by the fact that I hadn't had time to prepare the paper, hadn't had time to fulfil the expectations of the organisers, then it would have added to the stress of trying to give the best possible paper that I could. And at the conclusion, I had to accept, well, it wasn't as good as I would have liked it to have been. It wasn't as good as I could have done if I'd had time to prepare properly. It wasn't as good as it could have been if I'd known the audience that I was going to be giving the paper to. All of those things became new conditions that I had to deal with. The facts of the situation rather than my hopes and projections about the situation. Now, being able to do that, as I was observing my own mind, I reflected, isn't this wonderful how much more peaceful I am with the conditions in my life? I was able to reflect, well, I have made some improvements. I have grown through this practice that I've been doing. And this is how we really come to know whether our practice is paying off. Not by how peacefully we can sit in each meditation session, but how much more wisdom we've developed about the way the mind is and about the conditions that operate to create our experience in any moment, either in our meditation or in our life in general. So I encourage all of you as you go about your meditation practice to try to make friends with the things that are happening in your meditation. Try to generate that interest in the meditation object so that becomes the thing that you want to focus on, and that you gradually can replace all of the other things which beckon for your attention. Thoughts about the past, the future, or whatever, replace them with attention on the meditation object. And while you're working to do that, keeping your mind open, your heart open to whatever it is that you're experiencing in the moment. This is the way that we make progress on the path. May this teaching be of benefit to all of us, and may the merit of this teaching help us all to attain Nibbana.